Hi, I'm Lisa O'Brien, and you're listening to a podcast where nostalgia comes alive. It's Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. Roll it!
Welcome to Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, the podcast where nostalgia comes alive. Since July of 2021, Jake and his friends have interviewed professionals in the worlds of acting, directing, writing, puppeteering, and many more. Who will they be chatting with in this week's interview? Find out in this Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show episode.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, where nostalgia comes alive. Happy to be here with us, thank you for joining. As always, I'm your host, Jake Duffenbaugh. With me today, as always, our co-hosts, Chris Bixby and Matt Bingo. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing good. Hi everybody, how are you, Jake?
I'm doing great, Matt, thank you for asking.
Yes, wonderful. Great. Who do we have for today?
Today's guest we have for today, he's an actor and puppeteer. A lot of you may know him for being a part of some series that we're going to touch base on later, including Bear in the Big Blue House, Sesame Street, Pukapura, Between Us and Me, and others. And he's also did some good for The Science Kid and Bajanimals, and of course a lot more others that we will touch base on later. Please welcome Mr. Victor Yared. How about you here, Victor? How are you?
Imagining a wall of sound effects with huge applause and the world greeting me with open arms. Delighted.
Happy to have you here.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, great to have you here. Yeah. So to kick things off, we know who you are, but for those who don't, would you care to tell our audience a bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So I've spent the last 30 years or so as a puppeteer in television and film. I recently started writing as well, directing as well, but most of my career has been centered around family entertainment and in particular puppetry.
Very nice. So what was your background like and how did you grow up?
I grew up in Columbia, Maryland.
Oh, I'm taking it also from Maryland.
Me and Matt are from Maryland.
Are you guys Marylanders? All right. Well,
yes, sir. Sure. Born and raised.
What city?
Jake is in Lesby in Carroll County. And
I'm Calvert County.
I always get those mixed up.
No worries.
I'm in Hillthorpe in Baltimore County.
So you guys are too young to remember this, but back in the day when it was snowing out, you would all in the morning like listen, or you'd watch the news or sometimes they had a phone thing you could call in, but you'd have to listen for your county for school closings because we desperately were hoping that they would close school for the day. So Calvert County and Baltimore County, I remember hearing in the list, but mine was Howard County. So if they called your county, then life was good and you didn't have to go to school that day. Nowadays, they just send you an email telling you that school's closed. So I grew up in Columbia and I played music. My mom was a piano teacher. So I played percussion starting in the fourth grade and continued to play with orchestras. And I ended up going to a music conservatory called the Curtis Institute of Music. That's where I continued studying classical percussion. And towards the end of my time there, I got really into kids' music. In particular, I had toured with an orchestra in Japan with a chamber orchestra, and I bought a bunch of CDs that were not available in the States. They were like Jim Henson Jim Henson CDs, like from Sesame Street. They eventually did come out here, but it was recordings of songs from Sesame Street. And I just loved them. I loved picking out the voices of like Jim Henson and Frank Oz and Jerry Nelson. Richard Hunt. And so I got into writing kids' music. I started writing children's songs, and then I got an internship at Sesame Street because in their music department, I was hoping to write songs for them. And that's when I discovered puppetry, and I was doing acting and voiceover and a bunch of other, performing things all at the same time.
Nice. So what kind of like, because I know you mentioned like some of your inspirations, but like how did you kind of decide to get into puppeteering professionally?
I think, well, I met a guy named Tom Spina, who Tom has this amazing company called Regal Robot that does like Star Wars replicas. They have like a Han Solo and Carbonite coffee table and all these really cool things. But at that time, Tom was an aspiring puppeteer. And so I met him. He was interning with the Muppets at Sesame Street. And so I met him on his last day of his internship. And I told him I was interested in puppetry, and he asked me if I wanted to come work with him on a like kind of a student film, low budget film he was doing in Long Island. So I said yes, and that was my introduction to puppetry. So he's the one that really kind of got me started in the actual puppeteering department.
Nice.
Very nice. So, speaking of Sesame, you got to do a bit of puppeteering with Sesame Street on the short film, A Brief History of Motion Pictures. No, this is not to be confused with Don't Eat the Pictures. This is entirely different for you Sesame nerds.
That's
Could you
right.
kind of talk about that a little bit?
That's a deep cut, man. That was these trailers that they were doing for the move for movies that would just play before movies, and it was about the history of the movies. And it was my first time working on Sesame Street. I had been on Sesame Street on camera just in the background, that they put interns on a lot of times, which is cute. But this is my first time puppeteering on there. I did Biff in one of the wide shots. I did Biff. I did a right-handed for Rosita for a little bit. I assisted with the tornado puppet.
Oh yeah, right. I remember that.
And
Oh yeah.
there's also a giant rock that comes going through camera that I
Yeah.
puppeteered, which mainly was like me trying to like spin this rock and keep my hands below frame. It was suspended on this like pole, and so I was like kind of spinning it, but it was kind of roughly finished. So it was really tearing up. I had gloves on, but it was like tearing up the gloves I was wearing. But yeah, that's all I can really remember. It was cool because it was all the Sesame Street puppeteers, a big green room with a lot of puppeteer folks whose work I had admired for a long time. So it was cool seeing those guys in action.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And you also puppeteered on a series such as Bear in the Big Blue House and Between the Lines, which you mentioned earlier. What were those shows like?
Yeah, so that was a time when if you were a puppeteer living in New York City, there was a good chance you could work because there were three shows shooting simultaneously: Sesame Street, Between the Lions, and Bear in the Big Blue House. I got called for Bear on a day when everybody else was working, and they got to the bottom of the list, number 532, whatever I was. And they called me in, and my first day was a song we were recording. I don't remember which song, but I know that Tyler Bunch and Peter Lintz each had two characters in the main cast. So anytime they were both in the scene, two of their characters were in the scene, they would have to have somebody double it. So I was doubling for Trilo, lip syncing to a song. And because I had a musical background, I think, I was able to pretty accurately, I think, I hope, lip sync to the song. And so they liked me, they kept me around, and I ended up doubling for Trilo and Pop a lot on that show. Eventually got to do some smaller characters. There was a Tutter family reunion. I got to do Whiner Tutter. I got to
Oh
do
yes,
a sea
that's a funny
captain and a
episode,
couple other
yeah.
little Tutters. And then Between the Lions was happening at the same time, and just doing background monkeys and stuff like that. I got to talk eventually doing some duck. There was like a red versus green scene, and I was on, I don't remember which side I was on, but I was a duck. And so there were days when I would work on Bear for part of the day and then go uptown and work on Between the Lions for part of the day. So like I said, it was a good time to be a puppeteer in New York.
Awesome to hear. So you're one of many puppeteers on another Disney series, The Book of Pooh, which used tabletop puppetry. What was it like in kind of working with that type of style of puppetry?
It was cool. It was definitely very different from what I had done previously. And again, big room, there were, six characters, each with three puppeteers sometimes. So you'd have 18 people. on set, sometimes all in green. It was cool because it was, back then we used to use a real-time background, so you could actually see the backgrounds you were performing to. Nowadays they do less of that. They don't tend to use, it's called a live key. They don't tend to use a live key so much anymore. But back then they did. It was really cool. You could see the environment they were actually in. And you know, for me, it was a great learning experience. I had done some tabletop puppetry, but not a ton. And I was, again, a day player on it. So I was coming in and working with people who were doing it every day. I got to meet my very good friend, Paul McGinnis, working on that show. And Paul is somebody who is, just tremendous at tabletop puppetry. And so I learned a bunch, from watching him, from talking to him, and yeah, just kind of developed a new, skill set.
Absolutely. And one of the shows that you were a regular puppeteer on was the Comedy Central series Crank Yankers, which I think is just a wonderful, funny show. Can you kind of talk about working on that?
Yeah. So we did the first season in New York. And then all the subsequent seasons have been in Los Angeles. We did four seasons initially total, and then had like a 13-year hiatus where we all were pretty much sure the show was done. And then it miraculously came back in, I think it was 2019. And we did two more seasons, the last one, which was during the pandemic. You know, it was a great opportunity again to develop another skill set. You know, most of the time when I get hired, it's because of my voice and my acting and improvisation, that type of stuff, because we're normally voicing the characters. But on Crank Yankers, it was a lip sync show. So really you had to focus solely on the manipulation of the puppet. So I think from the beginning to the end of the first season, my manipulation skills improved a lot. And I think going forward, you know, through future seasons, it just gave me the opportunity to really focus on the movement on the puppet and how I could best convey an emotion or a difficult action using puppets that weren't necessarily designed to do those difficult actions. You have to find the puppet version of what you're doing. So if you're, you know, picking up a book and turning a page, you know, what's the puppet version of it? Well, you know, we'll hold the book from below frame so that you can't see my hand below it holding it. Or sometimes they'll make a rig with a rod to hold it on if it's a smaller, lighter book. But learning all those tricks of the trade of how to do really specific, subtle manipulation that supports the work. And in the end, that may have been one of the best things for my career, because it helped me, when I am voicing characters, to have that other way of expressing things through the actual manipulation of the puppet.
Definitely.
Absolutely. So you also puppeteered numerous characters on the sitcom Greg the Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
But it honestly didn't last that long, sadly, but should have. What was it like working on that?
Yeah, Greg was, it was sad for us that it didn't last longer. They aired six episodes. And then American Idol, the first season of American Idol, replaced us. And our show was a lot more expensive, you know, because it was a primetime sitcom and we had celebrities. And so that show came on. It cost, you know, almost nothing and was like incredibly successful. So once that happened, we were kind of sunk. They did air the remaining seven episodes later in the summer, but we got canceled in favor of shows that had, I believe, lesser ratings than us. You know, that's how show business goes. They, you know, they pick and choose. So, but yeah, it was a great show. I was initially hired, you know, to just do background characters and stuff. And actually they hired me, which I didn't know at the time. They hired me to, again, double, like I had on Bear in the Big Blue House. They had me doubling Dan Milano, who had Greg the Bunny and Warren the Ape were his two characters on the show. But they didn't tell me that. So my first day of work, they said you're going to be, doing these characters today. And I was like, oh, I hadn't seen a script. I didn't know what we were doing. And my very first scene, I was in this room with Sarah Silverman and Eugene Levy and Seth Green. And I was doing Greg the Bunny, the main, character of the show, having never had the puppet on my hand before. Besides, I don't even think in the audition we had him on. So it was a big shock to the system. But by the second episode, that's when they introduced Tardy the Turtle that I got to play. And that character ended up becoming more recurring. So once that happened, then I was a regular, sort of part of the show going forward. And it was amazing. I got to, watch some of the very best, performers. Besides the puppeteers, there was Eugene Levy and Seth Green and Sarah Silverman and Bob Gunton, Dina Waters. I mean, they were just such amazing actors and so funny, and just really good people. They were all like just really kind, funny people to work with. So it was just a wonderful experience.
Nice.
Awesome to hear. So you also got to puppeteer with the Muppets on a number of projects, including the music video with Weezer. What was it like getting to work with them?
Oh, those guys were great. Yeah, they were, good sports about it. I think Rivers, he's more introverted than the others. So I think there were times I remember the puppets kind of surrounding him and him being like a little uncomfortable, with them. But he did a great job. And it was fun. I got to right hand Fozzie Bear, and I got to do a penguin. I think I got to do Bunsen for a couple of shots. So yeah, it was cool. That was a small group. I think I had worked with the Muppets a few times up to then, but that was my first time working with them with such a small group of puppeteers and really being part of that ensemble.
Definitely.
Wonderful. Such a fun music video too. It really is. Because you had the Muppet Show vibe of back then. It really was wonderful. Speaking of small groups and the Muppets, you also puppeteered on the web series Statler Waldorf from the Balcony as Waldorf, Dr. Teeth, Sweetums, and various others. How different was that in terms of it being like a web series rather than, something like a music video?
Yeah, that was one of the very, very early web series that had come out. And so it was amazing because it was a really small crew. And for the most part, it was just two puppeteers. But what was great about it is they would have us in as part of the creative meeting so we could pitch characters, pitch ideas. For the most part, they did use some of the main characters, like they had Dr. Teeth and the Swedish Chef and a couple of those guys, and of course, Statler Waldorf. But for the most part, most of the ancillary characters were brand new, just background characters that were written for the series. And it was such a great opportunity to perform new characters for the Muppets, because most of the time, there's the main Muppet performers that do pretty much all the speaking parts. There's not really a ton of opportunity for other performers to, improve and really, learn how to do characters. So for me, it was a great chance to try out a bunch of characters. I think my favorite, what was it called? It was called, something about the crew theater, cast and crew theater, background crew theater, something like that. I can't remember the name of it, but we got to do these couple of grips that were kind of working behind the scenes, and they were long scenes that were like, I think they were one shot, a lot of them, and just really fun, super fun to perform.
Definitely. And this is kind of another deep cut question, but you also worked on Muppets Ahoy, the Disney Cruise Line stage show. Yeah. What was that like? Yeah,
that was amazing. So that the first ones we did it was Statler and Waldorf from the balcony. We were heckling the comedians that were performing. So it was like Bob Saget and Mark, gosh, what's his last name? He was from Hooper's Place. Mark Gordon, I think, is that right? But anyway, we were heckling those guys. That was really cool. And then they had us back to do like a full Muppet show where we got to perform and sing and do like, I got to do Miss Piggy and Fozzie Bear. And there was a pre-taped bit with the Swedish Chef. So again, you know, just great opportunities to, you know, not develop my own characters, but try and live up to, you know, the legends that had come before us with, you know, Jim Henson and Frank Oz and try to, you know, do justice to their incredible characters that they created.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So you performed on the Sprouts series, Pajamos, as a character, Squacky. What's it like to work on that?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite shows I've ever worked on, mainly because the showrunner on it was Alex Rockwell, who is just one of the best writers, absolute best writers in children's entertainment. I've worked with her on a number of series since then, but that was the first time I got to work with her and Lisa O'Brien and Hallie Stanford, and just an amazing creative team, the three of them. But yes, you know, Squacky was an amazing character that Jeff Muncie had created initially, the four Pajanimals characters. And then Alex continued to develop. And you know, it's like a lot of times the performers get so much credit for doing these, you know, fun and funny characters. But so much of it in that case was in the writing. And so it was just it's just such a great gift to be given these scripts with. You know, you start reading, you're like, oh, you get to say these funny things and do these funny things. And you just feel so lucky and grateful to work with those amazing creatives.
Yeah, and there were a lot of good puppeteer, like other puppeteers on that too. Like I know there was Donna Kimball, there was, yep, you know, Sarah Lyle.
Michael Windsor.
Lyle, Michael Windsor. Yep.
Yeah, so initially when we did it, we did 10 music videos. Mm-hmm. And that was shot with myself and Donna Kimball, and John Kennedy was doing Apollo, and Alice
for the shorts.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and Alice Dineen did Cowbella. And then when we went to shoot the series, it was done in Northern Ireland, and they couldn't afford to bring all of the puppeteers out, so they ended up recasting two of those characters. And you know, John and Alice are just such tremendous, you know, performers. It's really hard. I can't say enough about how wonderful they are. But we were lucky to find Sarah and Mike Windsor, equally, you know, wonderful and talented performers. And I think the way that, especially like the way Cowbella developed, because initially she was like supposed to be an Italian character, and then they kind of dropped that. And so they were able to get, I think, to a stronger place once they changed that direction. So I don't know what Alice would have done with it if she had gotten that change, but certainly for Sarah, I think it helped really make that character pop, and Cowbella ended up becoming one of my favorite characters on the series. But yeah, Squacky was great, great fun to perform, and just an incredible series overall.
Absolutely. It was a wonderful show.
Yeah. When you mentioned about the shorts, one of the shorts I actually remember, because I remember when the, you know, the Pajamas, you know, you know, Sprout, after the night block, the night show, I remember, yes, they played the La 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 by song a lot. I remember that very well.
Yeah, they did.
It was like La La La.
They
la,
played that quite a yes, bit.
Yeah, it was. It's such a sweet song. And I think,
mm-hmm,
you know, Donna Kimball recorded that at some point, but I feel like for the series, I think it might have been, I could be wrong on this, but I thought there was a different singer. And that might have been for the shorts, but for one, there was another lady who.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, I think it might have been for like the closing, yeah, or something.
Yeah, that was the exact.
That must have been.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I think Donna did end up singing it in the series. So I think maybe that was for the shorts that it was someone different.
Yeah. So, speaking of songs, do you have any favorite like songs or you know episodes from Pajanimals?
Let's see. Gosh, that's a tough question. There's a really sweet friendship song. You and me.
We're a family.
That was a great song. I mean, honestly, all those songs were written by Michael and Patty Silvershire, just an amazing songwriting team and just so sweet and funny. There was like I'm Mad was a good song.
Yes.
Oh yeah. The Night Sky.
Night Sky. That was a good one.
I mean, honestly, I can't think of a bad song in that series.
Right? I can't either. So all of them are just wonderful.
I think my favorite song probably that Squacky sang was the Morning Time one.
Yes.
Yeah. We did that for the shorts, and then we redid most of those songs in the series. Yeah. That was a really fun one. There was another sort of a family song that I'm trying to remember the words, but anyway,
the Octopus Hug.
Yeah, Octopus Hug was a good one.
Octopus Hug is a good one. That's not the one I'm thinking of.
Good one.
But there was a song about mothers. I don't know if that's the one you're thinking of, but
I don't know if I really have a favorite. There was one episode that was called Wonderfully Different Squacky, which I liked a lot because it was about him and I think Sweet Pea Sue was laughing at him, but she didn't mean it. She didn't mean it in a mean way. She was just laughing like, oh, you're so different. But he took it like personally and was kind of upset by it. I thought that was a really sweet episode.
Yeah.
There was one where he was, I think that might've been the one where he was a magician. He was doing a magic show.
Yeah.
And, I think so. Yeah.
It was really fun. That was a really fun, fun piece.
Gosh, I think one of the episodes I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris and Matt, which I'll probably, we'll see. I think there might be one episode where basically Squacky was like afraid of
the dark.
That's a
fun episode. Yes.
Yeah, I think like a ball goes under the bed or something. And
yes.
Afraid that's to get right. Yeah. Okay. Yep. I remember now. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
That was a good one. That was a good one too. And I also, by the way, I also loved going to the different lands and the forest. Yeah. The Friendly Forest was one of my favorite songs too. Jerry the Bear.
Jerry the Bear. Yeah, that's a wonderful character.
Yeah. When they send over the scripts for those characters, I read his character and I just immediately loved it. I told them that I really wanted to play that character. And I made like an audition. I remember singing that song as an audition in my garage here and just loved that guy.
Yeah. So I know some Pajanimals fans are wondering, is it fine if we can hear a little bit of Squacky?
You mean the voice?
Yeah.
And Squacky's just like a, you know, sweet kind of young guy. And he has like a little bit of a lisp. He doesn't come out all the time, but sometimes certain words he has like a little bit of a lisp that happens. But yeah, you know, he's just a fun duck.
Yes, a very fun duck indeed.
Yes, you are, Squacky. Yeah, how's Pajanimals? How's everything been going down there?
Well, things have come to a bit of a slowdown since the aughts, as they're called, early 2000s. Not a lot of Pajanimals action. Actually, we just did some new Pajanimals shorts that I don't know when they're coming out. But we did do some new fun stuff. So I guess those will be out soon. Is it weird when doing this voice but seeing my face? It'd be cooler if there was like a yellow, I don't have a Squacky duck. A little doll. But anyway.
It's cool, actually. I was going to mention that, actually, because I saw on your Instagram, I think, that you were writing some new
animals. I first saw it on Sarah's Instagram.
Yeah, I don't think you saw it on my Instagram because I
know. Oh, yeah, maybe it was Sarah's.
It was Sarah's that I saw. Right. Oh, yeah, maybe right. I saw it on Sarah's, and I'm so excited that animals is back. Yes. I really am.
So very excited. Three of us are very looking forward to it. Pajama is such a wonderful series. And for a new generation, it's just amazing.
Yeah, for a new generation, it's wonderful.
It was a great kind of final show for the night for Sprout. Because, you know, the Goodnight Show, you have all these other shows. And then Pajanimals was kind of like at the end. Yeah. And because it was such a relaxing show, I think it really kind of helped, you know, kids, you know, go to sleep and wake up, you know, next day. I think it was a really good show.
Well, that was the Sprout Network that Lisa O'Brien was one of the.
She
was one of the folks in charge of that, and they did such a nice job. I felt like they really had a bead on that age group, those younger kids, and what their needs were, and all their programming was kind of designed around that. So yeah, really wonderful network.
Absolutely. So now, very recently, we sadly lost Marty Croft, who you puppeteered on for several projects for and prior. Can you share any memories from getting to work and, you know, getting to know him?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching, you know, Sid and Marty Croft. And so, you know, Land of the Lost and H.R. Puffin stuff, Dr. Shrinker and all those crazy shows from the 70s. I loved. And so when they had auditions for Mutton Stuff.
Yeah, Mutton Stuff. Yeah, great show.
That was my first time meeting those guys. And Sid, you know, Sid had a lot to do with the show, I think, creatively, but his was more behind the scenes, and he was not there as often. Marty was there every day producing the show and heavily involved, and just an incredible character. He's just like kind of a gruff, older, you know, New York-y sounding kind of guy. Just, you know, super generous. I remember we shot the first pilot. We actually, before we shot it, we did a read through, and he said to the people, there were about 12 of us in the room, and he said, you know, we're a family now, and we're all going to be working together for many years. And, you know, he just kind of, and which I, you know, as a cynical, you know, performer, most pilots don't get picked up. Most of the time you don't get to keep working with people. So I didn't really believe him, to be honest. But he was absolutely right. And you know, it really became like a family. We shot, over the course of 3 or 4 years, we shot, I think set over 70 episodes of Mutton Stuff. We shot 8 episodes of Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, a reboot of that franchise. We shot 2 pilots. And just, you know, he was just a wonderful person to work with. He was a great character. And my favorite thing about him is he would make speeches at the rap parties. He would always share information about the show and about like pickups and things that he wasn't really supposed to share, but he just didn't care. He just said what he wanted to. And his brother Sid would talk. That was one of the few times Sid would be there too. And he would always talk at the rap parties and would just tell us stories about him riding the train when he was working for Barnum and Bailey Circus as a kid and stuff that had nothing to do with anything anybody was talking about. He would just kind of ramble on, and the two of them together were just an amazing combination, and it's a big loss for the world and for me personally. Marty was a great guy, wonderful guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's really cool that you actually did some characters on Mutton Stuff, which you actually did a Melvin, you know, the fire hydrant.
Yeah,
and were you doing one of the characters? Was it on the tree, or was it been Drew or someone else?
I did the Sid tree. There was a clock character. I can't remember his name now. Okay. But I did the clock, I did Noodles the Mouse, and I did Melvin the Fire Hydrant. And yeah, Melvin was great fun. He was kind of my like New Yorker guy. And he was just, you know, there was like a hole, they would make a little platform and I would come up through a hole and perform him. And I loved when they would have dogs come and interact because you never knew what they were going to do. And yeah, Melvin the Fire Hydrant was, he was a fun one. That show was written and showrun by my pal, Bradley Zweig, another one of the great showrunners I've had the pleasure to work with. Just an incredibly funny, naturally funny guy and someone who knows how to write for puppets, knows how to write family entertainment. And Bradley would always give us a lot of freedom with the script. He never, you know, anytime I wanted to change something or add or not say something, it was never precious to him. He always just wanted to make the shows as good as possible. And so he would allow us to riff and improvise and just a tremendous talent.
And a good friend of ours, also previous guest, Calvin Milan, he says hello.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Calvin was Calvin. Young. He was little when we first did the screen test with him. I did a little screen test. God, I feel like he was like 12 or 13.
Wow.
Did it. Yeah, he became so much more confident and, you know, a real performer.
Yeah, such a great guy. I love Calvin.
Yeah.
Such a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of improvising, you've performed in the puppet improv troupe Puppet Up Uncensored, which as of the time of recording just had some shows. What's it like working with Puppet Up Uncensored?
Oh man, such an amazing show. I mean, I had a background in improv prior to that show. I had done improv in New York City and also out here with the Groundlings. And so for me, again, just a great chance to develop characters and work in the medium that I was most comfortable with, puppetry, but combining that with another thing I love doing, which is improvisation. And, you know, those shows are, you never know what's going to happen. It's all, you know, audience suggestion based. And so you have a great show where you feel like you're killing it. And then the next day you have one that's less good. And there seems to be no real rhyme or reason to it. I can have a great show when I'm having a terrible day, and I can have an awful show when I had a great day, and vice versa. You know, it was a great challenge to me and a very humbling to get out on the stage and have to, you know, make up a show night after night, but certainly one of the most fun projects I've worked on.
Absolutely. And speaking of kind of well, it wasn't really a reboot, but the prequel, you also worked on the Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. What was that like, getting to kind of work on kind of the comeback to such an iconic movie?
Yeah, I mean, so certainly from that point of view, there was a little bit of pressure to live up to, you know, what had come before us. Just an amazing scope of production. You know, the sets were beautiful and enormous, and the puppets were incredibly, you know, detailed and well-crafted, and costumes and props. So you were put in this world that had been assembled by these artisans that just, you know, made you feel like you were in thrall. Like you couldn't help but feel like you were in that same world from the movie. And again, you know, gifted by the writers with an incredible character. I got to perform a few characters, but the main one was the Podling Hup, and just so incredibly well written. He was, you know, heroic, but also funny and earnest, and just I like doing gibberishy kind of characters, but this was a whole made up language, made up by Joe Lee. Just incredible to be able to learn this new Podling language. And then Will and Jeff are two writers that were there for the mainstay of the project. Jeff in particular was there for the duration and you know, helped work on the scenes as we were going, along with our director and, you know, Louis Leterrier, and just amazing to be part of that big world. It felt like we were shooting 10 mini movies over the course of 11 months. So just really, I would say the pinnacle of my career for sure, being able to shoot over in England and work with, and I'd be remiss not to mention the incredible cast that we got to work with over there. I had known some of those amazing British puppeteers, but got to meet new ones, and our core cast, which was about 12 of us, was just some of the best, most talented puppeteers I've ever worked with. I'm going to try and see if I can get all their names or not. So it was me, you know my name, Dave Chapman, Warwick Brownlow Pike, Kevin Clash, Alice Dineen, Catherine Smee, Helena Smee, Ollie Taylor, the great Louise Gold, Neil Sterenberg, and then Damien Farrell, and Becky Henderson, awesome. who was our youngest cast member of the core, of the main core cast. We also had incredible support from, you know, upwards of, you know, 40, 50 other British puppeteers that would come in and who were all just, you know, talented, wonderful people. But that main cast of us, the 12 of us that were there for the duration every day of the shoot, just we all really became bonded in such a way, a strong way from that experience.
Of course. So one of the newer projects you worked on was the Disney Plus series Earth to Ned. What was that like?
Well, Earth to Ned was fun. I was kind of a day player, so I was only in for a few episodes here and there. But again, incredible puppets and really fun celebrity guests that they had on there. Really cool to be a part of that, and just amazing epic sets like that. That set that they built for it was just beautiful. I was mostly I was under Ned doing an arm or I got to do, I can't even remember what those little monkey looking characters were, but I got to do those a few times. But yeah, I was just a day player on that show.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So moving on from puppetry, you've also done some work as a voice actor. How did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, I'd always, you know, I'd studied acting back before I ever did puppetry, and I studied voiceover because I loved cartoons and I loved animated voices. And puppetry, you're doing a lot of those same animated sounding voices. So I studied voiceover back in New York before I ever came out here. And I think the first opportunity I had was there was a show called Celebrity Deathmatch, and I got
yes, I forgot about that show. I remember that.
Yeah, I got to voice a couple of characters, Anthony Edwards, and I think I did Jerry Garcia and Kenny G. When I came out to Los Angeles, I got to do different shows here and there. But the most fun show I got to work on was Robot Chicken, which was created by Seth Green and Matt Senreich and
love
Seth
Robot Chicken.
Yeah, and I knew Seth from Greg the Bunny. So first season, he called in some of us to do voices. I ended up doing, I think, about 6 episodes that first season, and then as the show went on, it became a lot more celebrity driven. but they were kind enough to always call me in for an episode or two, so I got to work on most of the 10 seasons that it was on, and really just incredible show, and just so funny and you know, dark and crass and all good things.
So now one of your voiceover roles was voicing Gerald and Mort, which is Sid's dad, by the way, on a Hanson and PBS series Sid the Science Kid. What was that, getting into working on that?
Yeah, so Sid again was the showrunner on that was my friend Bradley Zweig, and that was my first time working with Bradley. So amazing scripts, amazing freedom to perform. And unlike typical voiceover, this is actually a puppetry show. So we're performing digital puppets where I'm animating the face and another performer In this case, Alon Williams was doing the body. Alon and I became so tight, and like, I just love that guy so much. And he, we call each other me, you know, when we see each other,
because
we had to be so unified. And we actually got to reunite on the show Word Party. Not the first season. The first season, Alon actually did Kip. He did Johnny T's character. But I think a second or third season, he jumped over to Bailey, which was great. But Sid was great. And, you know, that system, the Henson Digital Puppetry Studio or Performance Studio, Puppetry System, the name changes from time to time. But that system takes some getting used to, because there's a lot of different gears and buttons that you operate with your hands. And so getting used to that was a bit of a challenge. But ultimately, like with any acting or puppetry, it's about forgetting about the technical side and just letting the character perform. And so, ton of fun doing both Mort and Gerald. Oh, and for Mort, it was John Cameron did Dad's body. And again, you know, just you unite with those body performers in a way. You know, when you do typical puppetry, you might have an assistant doing your arms or something like that. And certainly you have to work together really closely, but those tend to be someone following you more. They're following your voice and following your performance. Whereas with this digital puppetry, where you've got a suit performer, you're really creating that performance together. So John and Alon are as much a part of those characters as I am, and so it really. Was a wonderful chance to work with those guys and develop these two characters together.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah, City of Science Kids is such a wonderful, wonderful show. I think you might remember some of the episodes that you might mention. I know you mentioned some of those, Chris, because, you know, City of Science Kids is one of those shows I remember watching PBS, like, frequently. It's such a great, great show. There's one where basically Gerald, Sid, and Moore were in a campfire.
That's amazing that you mentioned that one, Jay, because that's exactly the episode I was thinking of. It was my favorite episode. As soon as you start talking, that's exactly what came to mind. And at the end, they're sitting around looking up at the stars, and Gerald's like,
"Yeah," and then Moore just playing
Sid's
guitar.
It's like, "Sid's dad, can I ask you something?" And he's like, "Yeah, Gerald, what is it?" He's like, could I? And then I remember they were making like a wish on the star or something. And he was like, "I just wish that I could come camping with you again." Like, that was his whole thing, is he wanted to just hang out with Sid and his dad. That was really sweet. And I, you know, my daughters were pretty young when that was out. And so we watched that camping episode. I got a copy of it. And we watched that one over and over and over again. And just really fun. And Gerald's so dumb. He shows up with his giant two suitcases full of, like, you know, stuff.
And, you know. I love Gerald.
Yeah, so much. And then he's scared of the dark. Oh, and so he's scared of the dark. And
like Scroggy, too.
Yeah, just like, it's a
when you voice the different characters, when those characters are like a kind of same thing with the dark, that's funny.
Almost all my characters are dumb and fearful. Sid's mom sings this really beautiful song that Sonia, who voices the mom, sang. And he comes in and she sings him this song in their kitchen, and it was just really, really sweet. And there's a sweet moment where he starts to leave and Gerald runs back and gives her a kiss. And I remember I asked Brian, I think Brian Henson was directing that, and I asked him if I could do that. And he said, "Yeah, I'd do it." And then, so he ran back in and gave her this kiss. And then the mom just kind of makes this face, like she kind of shakes her head at Gerald and makes this funny face, which was a combination of Alice, Deneen performing the face, and then Sonia, who voices the character but also is the body performer, shaking her head. And it's just such a sweet little moment. That was a wonderful episode.
Yeah, one of my favorites, I think, is the one where they have the backyard sing-along.
I was just going to mention that one, school sing-along.
Yeah.
That's a great
one. Yeah, and the sticker chart.
Yeah, both of those two episodes were our song episodes. They would take songs that had previously aired, and then we redid them for those two episodes. That backyard show, there was another really fun thing where Sid's mom and dad come in and they're holding the baby, and Gerald is like the usher that shows them to their seats, and he's like, "Tickets, please!" And Alon, who's doing the body, is just his body performance there is just so funny. He's just got this like little walk he does, and he takes their tickets, and it's just really both those episodes were terrific.
Yeah, and then there was also Sid the Science Kid the movie.
Yes, that's right.
Now, I was actually shooting Pajanimals when they did that. I was over in Northern Ireland, so I was not there for any of that. And I ADR'd the entire movie when I came back. I'm not sure. I think Alan Troutman performed Gerald. I'm not sure if he also did Dad.
Alan Troutman, he's great.
Yeah,
terrific performer. It's tough, though, because Gerald's way of speaking is so choppy and broken up. And so, you know, Alan's way of speaking is very different from mine. So trying to fit in the ADR to the lip flaps, I remember being challenging, but in the end, I think it worked out well. And he certainly did a terrific job standing in for me on that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You had mentioned Word Party earlier. You got to voice Bailey the Elephant, as you brought up earlier. Could you kind of talk a little bit about that show and what it was like?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, most of my characters are really stupid and fearful, but Bailey is one of the first ones that I was not the comic relief. That was Kip, who was the funny one. And Alex asked me to, because I don't remember, I think we probably auditioned for both, and Alex and Hallie Stanford asked me to do Bailey instead. And, you know, Bailey is such a sweet character, and so it was fun to play one of the more straight characters and just really go in, you know, dive into him being really loving, and you know, he really wants to take care of everybody else, and just a super sweet character. And then Elizabeth Roberts, I was blanking on her last name for a second, Elizabeth Roberts performed Bailey's body for the first season, and Elizabeth hadn't done that kind of motion capture stuff before, so it was all very new for her, but she was a really sweet person herself. And so I think she was really natural at doing that character. So she did a really lovely performance and laid the foundation for what that character would become. And then when Alon took over it, he continued that, and I think in general, we perform, characters that are different than ourselves. But I think you have to have some of that element in you to really do a good job, and both Alon and Elizabeth are kind and sweet people and have that, in them to give those performances. He sings, Bailey sings this Applesauce Sky song. Happy to be sitting under a tree, watching the clouds roll by. Really beautiful song. And a lot of people there were like a lot of people wondered like, what's an applesauce sky? What does that mean? And I don't really know the answer, but I like the song a lot. So, it was a really, really sweet one to perform.
Yes. And aside from puppeteering and voiceover, we mentioned you're also a director and writer. Can you talk a little bit about your work in those fields?
Yeah. So I started writing on Word Party. I think the second season I wrote a couple of scripts, and then I wrote a couple more in the last season we did. Writing is a very different thing. I'd been around children's entertainment, family entertainment for so many years that I was familiar with it, but actually putting pen to paper and coming up with something that was meaningful and put something good into the world was felt like a big, you know, responsibility to me. But again, you know, I had Alex Rockwell, who's really, you know, become sort of a mentor to me in terms of writing, helping me and encouraging me, and just observing her, like, you know, looking at, I've been in a writer's room with her and just looking at everybody's scripts, and hers in particular are so simple, where someone else would have two or three sentences, she would have one, and yet she would have more meaning in that one sentence. So she really knows the value of words and how to convey things and be funny and be sweet. And so I learned so much from her. And then I worked on a show called Friend Space, which was a much wackier, older show that's just pure animation, no puppetry. And so I got to write four episodes for that. But yeah, writing is, you know, writing is still tricky, you know, trying to create, you know, trying to create these characters and shows. But it's something that you have to do as a performer. If you want performing opportunities, you have to have the ability to write. And then directing, I started, you know, I've been directing for years just on like smaller shoots and YouTube things. You know, it's kind of a natural progression as a lead puppeteer on a show to become a director eventually. But I really started working professionally on Crank Anchors. John Kimmel, who was our showrunner in the 5th and 6th season, was very generous and gave me the opportunity to direct on that series. And so I ended up, you know, doing like 9 or 11 episodes, which was amazing. And learning how to have a lot of creative input on how things get done, but also, and maybe more importantly, how to step back and let other departments do what they do well. And you really become more of a curator of other people's ideas than anything else. But I love it all. I love all three: performing, directing, writing. But you know, performing probably still is my favorite.
So now, since we're about to go to wrapping things up, so can you share any projects you're currently working on?
Well, we have those shorts coming out for Pajanimals, and I did a movie over the summer. I'm not sure what it was called. Stinky Summer at the time. I'm not sure if it's still called that. It was like a skunk puppet that goes away to a summer camp with these girls. And then I've got some upcoming pilots and things I'm shooting, and there's a show I worked on called Slumberkins. They should have a second season of that coming out pretty soon. So yeah, trying to stay busy.
Yep.
Awesome.
Wonderful. If people would like to connect with you, where can people find you?
Oh, you know, regular social media stuff. V Yared on pretty much everything: Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, which is X, or, you know, I don't know, they change every day. So, you know, whatever the platforms are, look for V Yared or Victor Yared. I'm pretty much out there.
Awesome. Nice. Links will be in the description below. So this last question that Chris is about to ask, we usually ask every guest. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, thank you, Matt. So, of course, this podcast is called Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. When you think of nostalgia, what do you think of, or how would you define the word nostalgia?
I mean, the instantly what comes to mind for me is Star Wars, because only because of my age group. I was born in the 70s, so when they re-released the Star Wars movies, they showed them in New York at the Ziegfeld, and my wife and I went to see it. And it was the first time that I really had that feeling of my childhood coming back to me. I was watching a movie. And by the way, I'm not like a crazed Star Wars fan or anything. It's just something I love and enjoyed. But I haven't seen, you know, the movies like a million times. I've seen them a lot because they're on a lot. But it was that first time I had that. It's that feeling of familiarity. That like sense of your youth and home and safeness. But seeing it again as an adult, you get to kind of re-experience it. It almost takes you back to that place when you were younger. So that's, I guess that's what nostalgia, you know, sort of means for me. And certainly you know, Star Wars, those first three Star Wars movies are kind of what, that was the first thing that took me there. And, you know, so much of our nostalgia is through pop culture, through television and movies. I think there's books as well. But, you know, I grew up in a generation where there were TV dinners and families would sit in front of the TV and your parents would just let you watch TV for 8 hours and nobody thought it was that bad for you. And so much of our nostalgia is wrapped up in that. Hopefully future generations will have other stuff besides TV and movies as nostalgia. But for me, I guess that's probably really mostly what it is.
That's a great word to end on. Awesome. Well, Victor, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This was a blast.
Yes, thank you very much, yes, Victor, for doing this and for what you've done over the years, you know, for what you've done, be a part of our lives, you know, for what you've done and you know, keep up a great work of what you're doing now. I cannot wait what's next in store. Especially now for shows like The Science Kid and you know, and so many other things you have done, you know, it's just what you've done is means a lot for my childhood and for what we're doing. It's amazing and I cannot wait, you know. What's happening next?
Well, I appreciate that, and that means a lot to me. Hearing that it's had value to you, and that's ultimately why we do it. You know,
absolutely.
Well,
right, guys.
Number one thing.
Yes, keep in touch, Victor. I will let you know when this goes up, and I'll send you the link to Lisa's as well when that goes up.
Yeah. All right, Chris. Nice to meet you guys.
Nice to meet you too. Enjoy the rest of your day and have a happy holiday season.
Yes, happy holidays. Yes.
Take care, guys.
Bye. It's goodbye from us as well. We absolutely enjoyed our time with Victor Yared. Again, as we mentioned, links to his website and his social media will be in the description down below, so you can connect with him, check out his work, and so on. But yes, again, keep on lookout for more wonderful interviews coming your way. And as always, what do we say, Jake?
Keep nostalgia alive. Take care, everyone. See you next time. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to another wonderful Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show interview. Be sure to follow Jake and the crew on social media and stream the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And as always, remember to keep nostalgia alive. Bye-bye.